Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is June the 4th, and you were doing the a redo call from May 28th. And my apologies for the difficulties last week, and so just wanted to do our call this week and make sure you get information about marketing. Since this is such a huge area, I may do a part one this week and a part two on the next call. So since our calls are always the second, fourth Thursday of the month, so the next one, since we're doing this redo call this week, we'll have the next one next week, which is the second Thursday of the month, June the 11th. And then you can put down that on your calendar if you like, June 11th, and then the next one would be June 25th. They're always at 9 a.m. Pacific and 12 Eastern, and you can always email me your questions. The main purpose of the call is to connect with all of you and to answer your questions. So wanted to know, if anyone has, I know Michelle sent in a question to me about a client, so I'll answer that at the end. Anything else? I don't know, Alex, did you have any specific questions on your mind right now?
Yeah, just basically any hints or ideas or how to put the word out there. I mean, I've tried different ideas, and so far it's not working out for me, or not as well expecting.
Okay.
So hopefully I can do maybe something differently, or so I can get this business rolling. Otherwise, chapter 11.
There's so many different ways now to market, and I think we can be a lot more creative and have there's more free ways to do marketing now than ever before. In the past, it was brochures and have to print things out, which you can still do, but it's better to, if you're going to print something, I think just limit it to business cards or something, but mainly doing marketing online is much better. That way you can change it around as you need to. Yeah, did someone just join us?
Hi, this is Dave McIntyre.
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hey, Alex is with us.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we're talking about marketing ideas here, and Dave, did you have any specific questions?
No, not this time.
Okay, so I'll just launch into some things here, and then if you have questions along the way, you can jump in. So one of the and this will be like a part one, and then next week we'll do next week also June the 11th on that Thursday. The same time to do part two with marketing, and there's so many different ideas they do on the 25th, do a part three with this, because there's so many areas to go into, things like all the different ways that you can market your top ways of getting to share with you my top ways of getting new clients and how things have changed with marketing strategies, and one thing is speaking engagements are really helpful, and I've done a lot of that, how to set up speaking engagements we can talk about, and what to say at the end of your talks to get a steady stream of new clients, big marketing mistakes we can talk about, and then of course client testimonials. You always, when you want to work with clients, it's really good to think if you have a good outcome at the end to get a testimonial from them. If you can, text is good and audio is better and video is the best if you can, and with their permission, of course. And you can even do video conferencing calls like with Google Hangouts, which is all free now, do an actual conversation with them by video, and then you can with Google Hangouts, if you do it on there, it's automatically recorded, and it can go onto your YouTube channel, so that makes it really easy. and it makes it sound more natural with you having a conversation with the client, a short, maybe just 1 or 2 minutes or so, just about your work with them. So that's a really great idea. And I like to do that with each of you as you get certified here, too, to endorse you and to give you a testimonial from me. Google Hangouts is a great tool to do that. So, let's start with a strategy that I think is really important is just to be intentional and targeting your marketing efforts. So I wanted to help you understand the wisdom behind targeting a market as opposed to just kind of spreading a wide net out there. Finding a niche that really works for you. Of course, we're in the area of psychology, and then sports psychology is a niche or a specialty within the whole area of psychology, and it's also a niche within the area of sports. But even within that, I think it's good to narrow the types of, target your market, so narrow the types and numbers of clients that you try to attract. That way you can be more effective in getting a certain group. So, because you might think, well, I need clients now, I'll work with anyone. But I have, many skills to deal with lots of different issues and topics, can work with all populations. And, of course, you don't want to miss out on potential clients. It might sound counterintuitive to narrow your pool of clients, but targeting a market, I think, is actually the most effective way to build a viable therapy or sports psychology business over time. And it's both a marketing strategy and a business model. Since you want your practice and your coaching to last, you want to get ready for the long term, so you want to be able to conserve your energy and your costs and your time. So if you target your market, think, what specific kinds of clients do I want to serve, then you can really focus your efforts toward a specific group. You can do better research on what that market wants and needs, and then you can really take ownership of that market and get closer to what their needs are. So, with getting focused, you want to ask yourself various questions, like in terms of focus, which sports do I want to look at, and also what sports do you have experience in yourself. And then which sports are you interested in as well? Because, I started in sports psychology working with just runners and triathletes because that's the areas I had most interest in, but then branched out and was able to get into other fields. Of course, within triathlons, there's swimming, there's swimmers and bicyclists and runners, the same sports, and then people in golf and tennis, equestrian approached me as well. And so let me just ask both of you briefly, which sports are you most interested in working with, and which ones do you want to target? Alex and Dave?
That's a good question. What I find is mainly because of the location where I practice, there is 4 distinct seasons, spring, summer, fall and winter. So any one sport is very seasonal. I would love to follow golf more closely, but between November and March, there's no golf.
That's
why I thought I tried to target mini squash because that's what sport they practice during the winter time. So one of my challenges is that, I feel I am kind of all over the place in not any one particular sport, mainly because I need to follow whatever sport's being practiced during the season. Like they play lacrosse in spring, but they have football in the fall, baseball in the spring. So if I follow the high school schedule, then each semester is different.
Right.
so I can feel I am kind of all over the place, and I need to understand so what sports can be played the next semester, and then maybe trying to attract the coaches prior to that semester starting. So it's a lot of, at least personally, it's a lot of work trying to find that out.
Okay, so different.
So I wish I could just say, oh, just golf would be great, but I, at least from here.
Because you're in New York, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay, so those are, that's a good thing to think about is the seasons and which sports are played, which seasons. How about you, Dave? Which sports are you interested in?
Primarily baseball and tennis is my, on the side it would be softball, just to grow softball. And those would be the areas I think. Secondary would be triathlon community and maybe volleyball. But I think first is, you know, I could baseball and tennis just with my past. And, you know, my kids have played out here, so I have some decent connections and know how the system works. I think I know for competitive athletes, so how you're talking seasonally out, for the competitive high school athletes, they're doing this stuff. Like at least baseball kids that are playing, that want to play D1 baseball, they're finding somewhere to, they're at a batting cage somewhere in New York or something like that, or, you know, some, so they're not doing it seasonally because they can't keep up with the competitive level. Like most of these guys that I, you know, have run into are doing it, are finding a way to do it like a, you know, like one of my son's friends played baseball. I think it was at Cornell or something, and they just played in their gym all winter. I think they had like a rotten baseball gym that they used to. So,
bat the balls out the windows.
Yeah.
Or with a net or something. Yeah. So, and you're in Arizona, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
out here it's easy as far as, you know, year-round stuff.
Right.
For better or worse, you know, I think kids are playing a little too much of one sport in some ways too, but as far as from the business end, I think that's, you know, kind of good.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great. Baseball, tennis, softball, and triathlon, and you've got experience with your kids playing in those sports. So anywhere that you have, connections, either through kids or through, doctors that you've been to, sports medicine professionals. Think of the connections that you have to help you get in the door. Those can always help as well. Anything that you've done through the sports, any coaches that you know, those can help you to get into those sports. And then the second question to ask is, what age group do you want to work with? For me, I started with adults, and now I end up working more with high school kids and college kids because there's such a need there in this area with a lot of pressure for kids to get into, from high school to get into college, the college of their choice, and to get some scholarship help through their sports. And so that's a good thing, but it creates a lot of pressure for kids to be able to perform well in their sport so that they can get into the college of their choice and get a scholarship. So sometimes it can create a sense that with kids that they're almost like their sport is like a job to them, and so that can create some problems. So even though they're very good at it, so that's when parents can call and ask about help for their child, and often parents are part of the problem. Of course, they're over demanding or have such high standards or high expectations. Oftentimes, parents are living through their kids the goals that they wanted to achieve. So that's all going on too. But so in with that example, I need to, you know, focus some of, like a website, focus some of the efforts toward talking to parents because they're the ones that call in initially about their kids. So you might want to think about that if you are dealing with kids to it's the parents that that call in initially, and the ones that make the decisions about who their child's going to see, and they're the ultimate ones that are going to be paying for the service. So you need to please both parents and convince them first, and then they'll often ask, okay, so I'm convinced now. Now how do I market this to my kid? And so is second level there. So so that's one example. So let me ask each of you, which age group would you like to work with, or are you working with?
My my main group is high school, middle high school, maybe college. That's kind of my age bracket. Primary.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm about the same place
uh-huh.
at this point.
Okay.
High school for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a really good group to work with because parents are highly motivated to pay for their kids. Oftentimes they'll pay for their kids' help much more so than they would for themselves. Parents are used to paying for lots of services for their kids. And if you can kind of tie in your services to them getting into college, which for most of them is a really important goal, then that can help them to see how valuable this is, that they can continue on with their sport maybe in college as well. But oftentimes they're so anxious in high school that I often tell them that it's if they have this performance anxiety now, and if they don't deal with it, then it may get worse and spread to other areas of their life. You know, with school, with family, with work situations, and all. So, but the good news is, if you address the issues now and work on it through sports, the anxiety, then you're going to have a much better, well-rounded child that's and student that can perform well in all areas of life. And so it's a really good time to invest in your child now. And through sports is the best way to learn those lessons of life. So, yeah, that's good. And then with geographic area, that's another question to ask yourself. What geographic area do you want to work in? Just your main area in your town, or greater, like with here, there's the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a huge kind of metropolis area here. Or would you rather work globally, you know, on the internet with anywhere in the country or world? What do you think, you guys?
Well, I mean, just to be, just put my get my feet wet. If I can have some clients in this area, get the ball rolling, then I can think about other targets. I don't want to start thinking about I can attract a person from Japan. I can maybe attract somebody from around the corner from my office.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe I'm kind of old-fashioned. I think the idea is, ideally, to have somebody come to my office and work maybe one-on-one. But I also begin to be more aware of the logistic complications of a parent to bring the child or the young child to see me in the office. Maybe some of them may drive, but most of them don't. So one of the ideas that I now remember that Michelle was sharing was to do more like a FaceTime or Skype sessions. So that may be another option of trying to avoid the inconvenience of driving to my office and still be able to provide work for these athletes. Because otherwise it becomes complicated, the logistic of driving to my office. And on top of that, these parents have a lot on their plate. They have sometimes another child or two, and they have to balance different coaches and exams, SATs and tutors and religion and you name it. They're so overbooked that in theory the idea of go and see a sports psychology sounds very, very interesting. But how do they fit that time in their already extremely busy agenda? So the idea of offering Skype sessions or FaceTime, that may well be a very good offering.
Yeah.
That was a good suggestion, Rona.
Yeah, that is great. Thank you, Alex. Yeah, because we've had Skype before, which works well, but now kids are really into FaceTime.
Mm-hmm.
So gives another option with it's available through iPhones, and every kid has an iPhone now, it seems like, or something equivalent. So it feels like you're right there with them. Yeah, and another good thing about the FaceTime or Skype session is that you can do a regular scheduled session, but then if the child is having a crisis or something coming up that's, just really bothering them in the middle of the week, then you could do another quick FaceTime session that you charge for, of course, and FaceTime or Skype session, kind of like emergency sports psychology,
mm-hmm.
and where you can, where they're really having a problem, but they can't, it would be hard for the parent to, like you say, drive to your office,
mm-hmm.
But it's easy for them. They're always on their phone, so you could just do a 15-minute or half-hour FaceTime session with them.
Yeah. I mean, Joanne, how do you navigate this challenge? How works better for you?
Which one?
You're saying that you're seeing also young athletes. So what works better for you, or how do they come to see you, or do you also offer like a FaceTime session? What works better?
Yeah, that's a good question. What seems to work well for me is if they can come in the first time with the parent and child, then they can see me and they get the full experience of face-to-face time. And, when you're with someone, you get, then I can see what's going on with the child. For instance, if they have ADD, ADHD, they're fiddling a lot, I could see that there. They have trouble focusing. I could see that right in the office, whereas I might not see that on the phone with FaceTime. And I can also see the interaction of the parent and the child there and see if the parent's really being overbearing, or how they interact, whether it's a positive or how much negative interaction is going on and how much pressure is there. So you can see a whole lot of stuff going on that first session. And sometimes I'll have them, do the parent just stay for the first 15, 20 minutes in the session with the child, and then have the parent go out and sit in the waiting room or go for a walk or go out to the car, whatever they want to do, and then come back. So I can just have some time just with the child. Or sometimes sometimes the child really seems to need the parent there, so have the whole time with both of them, and then after that, it seems that once they've seen you once, then they can continue to come back if they face to face, which works great, or if they can't, then just say let's do either phone on the phone or the FaceTime or a Skype session after that, and since they've had that first face. One-to-one session, they know me, and also it gives you a chance when you're in the office to show them your plaques or anything that you have, if you've got your Performing Edge Coaching Professional Certificate on the wall and other things, maybe pictures of you with other athletes, if you can put those on your wall, any trophies that you've won or plaques with your own sports, just kind of display those around the room. That gives you a lot of credibility, too, that you could show them in your office that mm-hmm. you might not be able to do with FaceTime. So that first time is good that way if they can. And then the parents can think, okay, well, it's just this one time that I have to drive in, and then after that do the FaceTime so that they don't feel they have to commit as much. Yeah, does that make sense? How about Dave, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm for doing as much of this by technology as possible, because I think for me coming to the office, I think it's great if you can get them in, especially for an initial meeting and assessment. I just think I want to make this as flexible. The more flexible and easy it is for them to participate, the more people I can get. So I don't want to be I want to really focus on not being tied to the office, because I think there's value, at there sometimes there might be more value to me to have them at the office than them. And, you know, they're the ones who are, I'm trying to get to pay me. So that's where I'm trying, you know, breaking out of the clinical psychologist role, where we have our office and the sofa and all that stuff. I'm trying to get out of that mode, because I think it's more, I think it could potentially hold me back rather than because it's not a clinical meeting, like, you know, like a psychotherapy thing is. So I'm hoping, you know, at least I'm looking to make it something to get out of that mode. So I think ideally I'd like to have a first appointment face-to-face, preferably at my office, and then from there on just, you know, kind of whatever's going to make, you know, whatever's going to support the person being consistent and following up, you know.
Yeah, I think so too.
You agree with Michelle, in line with what she's doing, which is interesting. So that reinforces that maybe the tendency or something that seems to be working well for you, Dave and Michelle, and I guess from you as well, Dr. Joanne. I think that you guys are providing more flexibility and more in tune with the technology. And
it can get really exciting when, if a client is at a competition, when they're getting really anxious and a lot of performance pressure, you can, you know, make sure you, I always say, you know, let's do, you know, they got their iPhone there all the time, and you can text back and forth as well, and just say, let's do a session, you know, the night before your meet or your competition there, and help you get ready. And you could even, you know, talk with them and then actually do a visualization right there, visualization exercise with them on the phone or with the FaceTime or Skype right there. And then you can help them to just close their eyes and relax and see you there. So that can really help them to get ready for the competition. And then if it's, say, swimming, there's multiple events during the day, then if they did their first event and it didn't go well, they might want to call you after that and to kind of regroup and maybe their coach is yelling at them. You know, often happens, like, God, you did this wrong. And parent, or something's happening, but you can be the one supportive person there that's kind of helped them navigate through all that. It can be really exciting to feel like you're part of the competition, and that the client, if it's a kid, they can help feel like you're on their, the one person that's on their side, and can be kind of a calming force in the middle of this, all this chaos that might be going on. So it can really be a great thing, and this is something that you can use in marketing too. That you know, tell the parent initially, when you're talking to the parent first, that this is more than just like in office sessions, but it can be something that's, you know, where you're right there with your, tell the parent you're right there with the child in those really key moments to make it a learning situation for them. And and of course, you know, work out how you're going to charge for that, so you're not if it's if you charge by the hour, then if during a competition, do a half hour session and charge for half of that, so that you add those up. And what I do is charge for four sessions up front, and it's, you know, think of it like an attorney charges a retainer fee, you know, and gets a bunch of funds up front, and then they work off of that. And any phone calls or other things that you're doing, take from that retainer fee. So do it that way rather than that works. It can work better sometimes than just a session by session paying for each one. So, and then you can feel more comfortable that you have funds up front too that are prepaid, and mm-hmm. so you can. If you are, you know, spending a lot of time with a client, then, you know, you deserve to, and most parents, I think, feel that way, that you deserve to be paid well for your time. kind of thing. And then they feel like just last night I was with a family here, and the woman, the girl, 19-year-old girl, has anorexia. This problem, she's having a major fights and blowouts with her parents, and her parents, even though her parents are really good, and the parents said, you know, look, if you have a problem during the week, just call Dr. Joanne. Looked at his daughter and said, call Dr. Joanne. You know, we can, we'll pay for that, and we can, that way you can feel like you've got somebody to call when you're really feeling bad or feeling anxious. So she felt a lot better just knowing she could do that kind of thing. And parents sometimes the kids are driving them crazy, and if they know that you can help, they're so glad to be able to have you on there as a resource. they're happy to pay you to be able to talk with their kid during the week to kind of help them settle down, keep the peace in the family, and to help them perform well and help them get through some of these crises. Because sometimes little things for kids, everything seems to be, can turn into a crisis. And you can help them to manage their emotions better. Yeah, so that kind of makes sense. Yeah, or any comments?
No, that's useful. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, and then what services? Another question to ask yourself is, what services do you want to provide, as individual, or for groups, or do workshops or speeches? What do you guys think, Dave? Are you still there?
Yeah, I had a no-show, so it's good. I'm sorry. So last I heard you're talking about the anorexia client who had access to you.
Yeah. I was just saying that they, she could call. It, the dad was saying, to the daughter, please, let's call her Sarah. If you have a problem this week, call Dr. Joanne. He was kind of like looking to me as a relief of stress for him, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And to help the client, that I could be kind of an intermediary. So that can be a really great thing. You can think of yourself as a resource to the parents and the kids. But I was just, have you had situations like that where you're dealing with families too?
Yeah, I had, not with the sports stuff. One situation where I think, so one thing that we've run into is parents are forking out a lot of money for club baseball and coaches and all this. And one of my new first referrals, or I'm done with it now, but was a high-end mother who was divorced, and she was raising her kid, was a high school baseball player, and my wife actually was talking to her during a tournament and just said, this business that we're starting, and this woman was like, I would love that, because I need to run things by someone I trust who knows the sport, who isn't my son, because like her son will say, I got to go to this tournament, and it's a scout tournament where they have scouts, and these are notorious moneymaker kind of tournaments, and she didn't really know that, and then they spent a ton of money, so she was like, if somebody could have told me just some. So I've done some in a situation like that to help this kid with his pitching, with anxiety on the mound, and also it seems like we did as much work with the mother, not in just kind of getting some of her questions, like what she should expect from this and how she can almost handle her son when he's so it kind of verged on helping her parent her athlete better, So those have been times where we've gotten involved on both ends, type of thing.
Yeah, so that can be great. Parents really want to know how they can be a good sports parent, and that's a good term to use, I think, sports parent. When they think of themselves as, it's kind of a cool term that's newer. And they think of themselves not just as a parent, but as a really special kind of parent that's helping not only their son or daughter, but their athlete that they have can have special knowledge, be not just a regular parent, but a sports parent. And so if you can do that, and that's if you're having a consult with a mom, I mean, if it's 5 minutes, a few minutes, that's one thing, but if it's, they often want a session themselves, then that's something, you can charge separately for. And I did that, for instance, with a mom and dad who had two girls who were swimmers, and both of them are really good at swimming, both have totally different personalities, totally different motivations, and need completely different kinds of strategies to perform well. So I charged for four sessions for the one daughter and then four sessions for the second daughter. And then the parents said, we need some sessions too. So I set up a block of four sessions for the parents as well to consult with them. So that's a way that you could really, get into a whole family system and, actually work with each person individually by phone and, make sure that you set it up so that if the parents need help, that's a really a separate kind of thing that you have expertise in, and so that should be something that you can charge separately for, and it can be really gratifying too there, because parents sometimes a lot of parents say things that are real triggers for their kids to get angry, and they don't realize it. And so identifying what those things are can really help, how much they're asking, how much should we push our child, how much should we hold back, and all of that. And it's there's so much has to do with the personality of the parents and kind of what you sense. That's why if you can get them in on that first session all together, you can really see a lot of what's going on there. And then after that, do the FaceTime kind of thing. And also, with FaceTime and Skype, sometimes the parents want to be involved too. So, like I have one parent and his 10-year-old son who's really good at basketball. And so when we do the FaceTime, the parent wants to, have the conversation too. So both of them will be in the FaceTime so I can see both of them there. They can see me. So that works out really well. So it doesn't have to be just an individual thing with one child, that they have the parent. If the parent wants to be in on the session for all of it or part of it, that can be good too. The parent just kind of sits right behind or next to the child, and you can see both of them there. So you consider that as an option too.
When you were talking about offices earlier, I think the one thing that at least I've with my work on the downside of, the downside of having somebody come to your office is, it's a doctor's appointment. And, not everybody sees the doctor appointment as something positive or, it's like if I'm going to the doctor, then I'm sick type of thing. So I think the upside of having some more flexibility with seeing people, it's not like, so it depends on where that person's at, but I could see that as a downside of just relying on the office thing, like you have to have this controlled environment type of stuff, and that doesn't always spin well for some people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and when I'm first, that's a good point, Dave, and when I'm working with clients, when I'm first talking to the parent, and sometimes the parents will say, I don't know if my son, I want to do this, but I don't know if my son wants to, because he might think of this as, a psychologist. I'm a head case or something. And I say, if you can call, address me as a performance coach rather than sports psychologist, sports psychology is one way. It just depends. But if they somehow don't like that term or think that makes them feel like they're have mental problems or something, then performance coach is a great way to think of it, or mindset coach. I use an example of a client or something that I've had before that said, okay, I've got my you know, like with track and field, I got my my running coach, I've got my strength and conditioning coach, and now I've got my mind coach with you. So thinking of it that way is good. And then also with the office, Dave and Alex, if you can make your office look as much, you know, sports-like as you can, so that it doesn't look like a traditional doctor's office, but it's, got, you know, fun pictures of sports all around.
I added 4 pictures, so it looks more like a, at least not so clinical, psychological office, so I made that change.
Oh, great. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, yeah, that's a good thing. Pictures that you can have, and, you know, if you have a client that you've worked with, that's, even if they're not famous, just getting a picture of you and the client, and then have them write something on it, like autograph it. They don't have to be famous, but just write, they could write, thanks Dr. Alex, or thanks Dr. Dave for all your help with me. Have them sign their name on the photo. That's even better. You know, it's just kind of like a little testimonial endorsement right there. So,
one day, Joanne, one day.
What's that?
One day. I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, yeah. You know, everybody does the selfies these days. Stand next to the client and do a selfie. So that's it's kind of funny that everybody's doing that. So, yeah, but that's good. So, and then in terms of what services you want, and I'd say, with your office, too, to just, it's okay to just, you don't have to have a, I work out of my home, so I don't have my name on the outside of the door or anything, which would kind of look too clinical anyway, but just people come to the door and then they come into the, straight into the office here, if you have a client that's had got a medal or a trophy or something, even if it's not Olympic gold medal, but it's just a simple little medal from a game or a race that they've done, that can be really a neat picture. You know, just thinking about for future, even just low-level competitions, often they'll win some sort of a little medal. And if you can get a picture of you and the client holding up their medal in the middle of the picture, it makes for a really nice photo.
Mm-hmm.
Just everybody thinks of medals as achievement kind of thing. So just an idea for you for that. What other then what services do you want to provide, individual or group? Or workshops. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I'm more inclined to individual right now, and maybe if doing a couple of presentations from teams and kind of doing the whole thing, offering like a freebie 30-minute presentation to a baseball team, and then with it just being a the freebie thing with the hope of getting a couple of referrals from that. So that's, I did that once. I got 2 referrals. I wasn't really ready for it, but it kind of happened. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, you know, that's good. So how did you get those clients? Did you say something at the end or in the middle?
Just kind of gave a brief overview of the value of sports psychology, and some of the different things that I've done with my background, and how to become more resilient as an athlete, especially higher levels. And, you know, so, and we talk a bit about some of the, you know, throughout how I had a conversation. I met a famous baseball player once who was a pro who spoke. I didn't meet him. So I listened to him. He gave a presentation, and at ASP actually a couple of years ago. And he talked a lot about the sport, the mental part of baseball, and so talked a little bit about that, what I had to offer, you know, and So yeah, so I got a couple of bites from that, and it was really before I was, what I learned from that too is I've held back a bit from doing more of that because I still don't have my website up or things like that. So when there's a couple of things that are in the midst of being worked on now that I want in place before I do that again, so I can kind of sell it more that I'm established and here's my website and this is what I have to offer. So
yeah.
So that was the idea.
Okay, good. Yeah, maybe we'll talk about websites more next time too. Yeah, that's good. If you're working on that, it's good to just a quick note on that is WordPress is the simplest way to, and I think best way to do a website. It's free. Just go to WordPress.org, not WordPress.com, but WordPress.org to find out more information about that. And it's a free software platform. And that's kind of the standard for websites now, so that anyone can work on it. And I've done my own websites. I'm not technical at all, but it makes it so easy to just put up your own website. You just choose a theme, which is what's really important now is to choose what's called a responsive theme. So you want to have your website be mobile friendly so that it can be seen on all platforms and all different kinds of screens. And if you have what's called a responsive theme, that means that if you're looking at it on a big screen, then it expands out. And if you're looking at it on a small cell phone, then it contracts to fit the size of the screen. So it responds in size. So it looks good on any screen. Whereas the older themes and the older websites, look great on a nice big screen, but then when you look on a cell phone, it looked terrible. Or people couldn't find things and the print's too small. So look, you can Google that responsive theme if you're starting new, or I'm having to redo some of my websites so that they're more mobile friendly and put the responsive themes on there so they're easier to see. So, and then you can go to Google, just search on Google and then mobile friendly, and there's a free tool there where you can click on the link there, put in your website, and it will tell you if it's mobile friendly or if it can be seen okay. So that's a tip on websites and all. You want to do, Dave, you said individual and then a 30-minute talk to the team. And, yeah, we'll talk more about giving speeches, speaking what to say in a talk maybe next time, too. But it's good to – one thing you can do in a talk as well is actually if somebody has a question in the group or struggling with something, a particular issue, you could bring them up to the front or arrange it ahead of time and say, is there somebody that would need, what could be a volunteer, and just do a little 5-minute coaching session with them. And actually, people love that because you're actually not just marketing your services, but you're demonstrating what you can do right there in front of them. So ask for a volunteer either beforehand, that can work really well, or during the talk, and say, yeah, would you like to come up and get coached here? And just, have them, ask you, tell you about a little bit about what's going on with them, and then maybe give them one or two techniques right there, give them something that they can actually do. You don't want to do a whole session, of course, with them right there, but just, some samples of tips that you could do. That they could do right there based on that. And if you're a little bit worried about how it might go or what they might say, then you could talk with someone ahead of time and kind of rehearse it with somebody before the talk so that you could arrange that and make sure it goes smoothly. So that's a really good idea, too. And then it kind of breaks up the talk, so it creates different scenes, so you're not just giving a talk, but you're actually doing some interaction with the audience that way.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, does that make sense, Dave?
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah, so that's good. And the more more talks you can give like that to different teams, I think the better. You could do either at the end, you could either offer a free consult, or you could do like a free session. You know, what's worked well with me before is say three sessions special for $297. So basically $99 per session kind of thing. Because the $297 something that ends in 7 always, there's been a lot of research showing that for some reason the number 7 is a lot more friendly than 9. So if you say 297, people will respond a lot better than 299. And psychologically, 297 sounds a lot less than 300, even though it's not as much. So something like that could work, or just one session for $97. A lot of people might go for that. And a lot of times you might be thinking in a talk, you know, you're talking to parents there. I've done that before where I was just giving a talk for parents and or for actually adults and talking about their own fitness and their mindset. But actually afterward I found out that they were thinking of those techniques in terms of their kids, what would work with their kids. And I hadn't realized that oh, my gosh, they're actually – there's a whole other, with every adult that's sitting there, there's a whole other audience behind that, a whole other group of people that could use your services, and that most people have kids. And if parents are interested in sports or fitness, chances are their kids are too. Even if they're not highly competitive, they could probably use help with that. So their parents are always thinking of their kids. So address that in the talk too. This could be a session. We could do a session for you or for you for your child, kind of thing.
So when you have these three sessions, do you have a specific topic per session? If you give a presentation, somebody says, "Yeah, I want to sign up for three sessions." I'm assuming the first session is like an intake, and then you give them something, and then Do you have a specific plan on how you approach that?
For the three sessions?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on the person, but I don't necessarily have an outline. But you could, you could do that. One example would be, the three P's I talk about, positive images, which is the visualization, could be the first session, and then power words could be the second session of, how to do the self-talk, and then the third session could be present focus or how to, relax and focus, or you could change the order to make that the first one, the relaxation, and then always do, of course, the intake with or initial assessment with the first session. But you don't want to, one of the mistakes people make is just doing the first session and having it only be assessment, only evaluation, without giving the client anything. If you do that, then you might you've got this great assessment, but then the clients maybe walk out saying, "Well, what did I get out of this? I just answered a bunch of questions." And they don't feel like they got anything to work on. So it's really important to, I think of it as like doing an assessment, part of the assessment, the first session, getting an idea. But then by halfway through the session, then really start talking about tips and strategies. And every time I notice something that's going, that they've got a problem with, come up with a tip or a strategy or a different way of thinking about it, so that you're engaging the client in how to think about things and how to do things differently. So you don't need to find out everything about the client that first time. And, I used to, as a psychologist, want to do like a whole family assessment and who's in your family and how did you grow, what kinds of messages did you get growing up and, a lot of past kinds of stuff. But now as with the performing edge coaching and with sports psychology, it's much more present oriented and much more sports oriented. Just focus now on what's going on the present, that first session, because you're really doing three things in that first session, doing an assessment, finding out really quickly what's going on, what the main thing is that they're, the one main problem they're wanting to address, and then you're wanting to give them some actual coaching of things that they can do right away, and then you're also marketing to them and showing the value of your services of what could happen in sessions, 1, 2, and 3 here and beyond. To say, here's an action, so that by the end of the session, then you want to create like an action plan. The clients love that, and parents do too. The plan isn't just, okay, we'll meet next week, but make an action plan of some sort, even if it's just very minimal of here's what we can do for these 3 weeks, for instance, the 3 P's or whatever 3 things that you want to talk about during those sessions, and or goals, find out what the client's goals are, and just putting something down that they can do and having some homework for them to do during the week. So that they feel like, that's what will get parents kind of bought into this session and the kids knowing that, okay, I've got an action plan here. I'm not just getting coaching, but I'm in a program. The parents want kids to feel like their kids are, in a structured program of some sort. So does that make sense, Dave?
Yeah, sure. It does. Seems like because you want to, I think some, even with the psychotherapy, people come in and, some people might want to just do a full intake because the therapist is thinking it's all about them and just wants to get all this information. But, if I'm in crisis or going to see a new therapist, I'd like some engagement rather than just having to, go through my history and then not really walk away with anything by the end of the session.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can, if there's other things you want to learn, get more assessment on the next session, kind of things. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit of that each time. But, yeah, it needs. I found it a lot more success when it's balanced between assessment and actually, coaching them. Kind of let's dive right into what can you do here. Or if I'm doing something, talking about visualizing the pictures that they've got in their mind, and then they're talking about, the things, the negative thoughts that they're having, then I don't necessarily wait for session number 2 to go into power words. I'll just dive right into that and mm-hmm. say, okay, so what negative thoughts, what thoughts are going through your mind? The kid's saying, I can't do this, or I'm going to make a mistake, I'm worried I'll mess up. And so, I get out a piece of paper right away and draw a line down the center and say, okay, let's write those down on the left-hand side here, your negative thoughts. And for each negative thought, let's write a power words or positive reframing on the right-hand side of the page. Come up with 3 or 5 things on the right. And like with this family last night, this girl said, I don't have the same body I had last year. I'm not as fast as I was last year. It was her negative thought. And then we came up with, 10 different negative. She came up with some, and then her parents came up with some too, and it was really good. It was like a brainstorming of the whole family, of positive thoughts. Like, I'm willing to put in the work. I'm driven. I know what I want. She, in fact, has Stanford has accepted her, so she can say Stanford is waiting for me. The Stanford team is cheering me on. I'm going to make it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to win, that kind of thing. I strive to be a healthier, happier person. I'm getting better at a lot of things. I have long-term thinking. I'm improving every day. So we made those, came up with like 10 positive thoughts to counteract that negative thought. And then I thought to her, okay, so this is kind of like, I know you're really competitive. I told her, a client, so think of this like a team. We got the positive thoughts over here, and they're going to just cream that other team, cream the negative side over there. We've got ten positive thoughts to this one negative thought. So you're really loading up the right-hand side of the page and, you know, making it like a game. So she really liked that. So that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, Dave, to make it, you know, if you have three sessions, you give an example of what those three sessions could be, you know, one, two, and three. But that you're flexible, too, and whatever comes up is okay to handle that particular situation. Or maybe it's if let's say you're working, you're aware, you're talking to a team, and you're aware that they've got this game coming up. You know, the first one could be first session could be assessment and how to handle the first team. You know, the prelims, the second session could be, you know, how to, let's say they do well in the prelims, how to handle the second, you know, the quarterfinals or something. And the third one could be how to handle the semifinals or the higher pressure kind of thing. So that's
do you use assessments at all, like tools, like a particular, do you have any particular assessment form or like instrument that you find useful to use at times or no?
Yeah, various things. We should talk about those more next time too. One thing in my book, and that Your Performing Edge book, you all have that, right? If you look at chapter 9 on page 93, it's a chapter called Confidence Boost and Self-Image Building. So in that chapter there, and actually I can just email that out to you so you have it in digital form this week. It's on page, self-image assessments on page 96. And, talking about create a list of strengths and assets. And so that's really good for them to list their physical attributes and accomplishments and character strengths and qualities they appreciate in themselves. And then step two is identify your weaknesses or think of qualities that you would like to improve, but make sure that it's, you don't judge yourself, but just give accurate things that about your sports as well as personality characteristics, like maybe I lose focus halfway to the finish line. So that area. And then third is consider the negative attitudes that might hinder your performance, things to work on. So, you know, things like fear and poor self-confidence and perfectionism. Anger, blame, racing mind. So those kind of things. And then you can rate yourself on various things like confidence and self-esteem. So that's one good, really good assessment tool, I think, there. And then there's different various things that an intake that I use that's I don't know if I've emailed that to you, but I can also put that in an email this time too.
Thanks.
Yeah, that'd be good. If just strengths and identifying what your what areas are you struggling with, so that it's not, you don't want to overwhelm the client that first time with too many questions. But yeah, you could give like one maybe assessment tool each time, and just ask them some things and then do problem solving along the way. I think it's really good. So tools are great, I think, you can. I'm not. There's all kind of. You could get really detailed with personality assessments and that kind of thing, but I don't know if those are necessary per se. I think it's good to just have a few simple kinds of tools to assess their what's going on right now with them. And they're listing their strengths is really a good thing. And I think that tool of the negative listing the negative stuff on the left and positive on the right is a good, well, it's an exercise, but it's also a tool to assess what kinds of negative thoughts they're having. If they're having thoughts like, I feel terrible about myself, or I wish I wasn't here. If you detect any suicidal thoughts, then that's something. If you are a licensed psychologist, or then you can handle that. If you're trained to handle that yourself, you can. Or if you're not trained in that area, then you could refer them to a psychologist or someone if you feel like they may be suicidal or something. That's pretty rare, I think, in our area, but it's just good to be aware of that too.
Yeah, it's funny. I tried to last year. I put in for to give a presentation at ASP, workshop on suicide, mainly more about suicide prevention, with helping coaches identify or help, you know, kids who are struggling in that name. And they turned it down, and then I just queried about it. You know, what's the deal? And they said, well, we're trying to stay away from that. And I said, okay. So they didn't really want to hear about the whole suicide word among athletes. So I said that was kind of biased because, it's out there. Not that I'm trying to, you know. Anyway, I know suicide well, so I was just hoping I could develop a niche in that a bit. And at least this time around, it didn't fly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's great, Dave. That you're, and because you are a psychologist and you're trained in that area. Yeah, you're an expert, and you've got. Well, you just have been in the. You just retired from the military, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And,
yeah.
But you've had a tremendous experience with that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was hoping to transfer that, but I mean, you know, I know no one really wants to hear about that. So I'm not looking to, you know, that's kind of one of those things. It's kind of a cautious thing. I don't want to oversell the suicide thing, and then no one's going to want to talk to you about this other stuff.
Yeah, I guess, it's one of those things. Websites are so easy these days, cheap to develop. You could have just a website just for that and try it out. And you know, where you say if you have suicidal thoughts or that kind of thing as an athlete, I mean, you might find a huge population of people are wanting to talk with you. And it could be a real niche, like you say, that nobody else is working on. Then if for some reason it doesn't fly, then you don't have to have that part, or you could put it on as one part of one website kind of thing. Or you could, you know, do a few articles, and you could try that out. And I know it is a huge, like, for instance, out here, there's a particular high school where this, I mean, they were just in the last 5 years, there's like 9 suicides of athletes.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area.
Yes, I'm hoping to maybe just do a separate organization that would be more specific to that, so it's not tied to my sports psychology business.
Yeah, you could do that too, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I know that athletes in high school, there is so much pressure now with the pressure to get into the college of their choice and with iPhones now too, and all the texting that's going on, and this pressure with kids, just texting back, not... You know, having a, for instance, girls having a boyfriend and texting them and not getting, hearing back from that person is so important to them. And when they don't hear back, don't get a response to their text, I mean, that can trigger suicidal thoughts. It's, you know, it's just amazing. I'm sure you know. Even some schools are now considering banning their phones from schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if it's happening in your area. I know in the Bay Area here they're doing that because the phones are such a distraction, and so there's so much emotion built into that, into those texting, all the flirting, going back and forth, or not, or not, or people losing boyfriends or girlfriends over, the guy going off with someone else, and all that stuff is going on in the midst of whether there's athletes or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's something that, since you've got a real expertise in that, I think that's just because, yeah, the paper got, or your proposal got, turned down by one organization. Yeah, I wouldn't let that stop you,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, because you might find that it's a real need. But it's just, it's one of those things that, you know, parents, people don't want to talk about that much, but if they saw that, you know, if a parent has a problem with that with their child, they would Google that, I'm sure, you know, suicide and suicidal thoughts in my child, or some, you might Google that yourself too, and see what comes up, who else is doing things in that area,
mm-hmm.
and see what their, what their websites are saying, or what the articles are saying, and see how other people are approaching it. So, that's something that is a real need out there, and sometimes people don't talk about it soon enough, and you could use it as, you know, suicide prevention or healthy thoughts to keep kids healthy. I'm glad you brought it up, because you're since you have an expertise there, and I've noticed that. I've experienced kids sometimes. Or I know, just even in the area of track and field in our area here, one girl, I think, didn't do well in a track meet and just went off by herself, and afterward didn't talk to anybody, and then ended up doing a suicide attempt. And so that's where it's important to keep kids talking, in touch with people. And that's where the like we were talking earlier with the FaceTime and Skype and phone being available as a psychologist, a sports psychologist or a coach, being available to your kids at those moments of crisis is so important, that you can emphasize that to parents, that you can, it doesn't have to be just a once a week office session. It can be kind of as needed basis. So, great, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Dave. Is Alex, are you still there, too?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Oh, good, yeah. Great. Any other thoughts from both of you? One thing I wanted to mention was, kind of three areas to target your market. Getting focused, like you say, which is these questions I've been asking you now about, thinking what is your target market, so that you really focus, clearly focusing on a niche or a specialty or two or three specialties, then you can tailor your message, your sports psychology message, so it has the maximum impact, and you can put that on your website and in your articles, that kind of thing. And if it, for some reason, that niche isn't working out, then you can change to something else, or you can have, like you say, Alex, with the different seasons, in the summer you can be targeting toward golf, and in the winter targeting toward squash, or find sports that are done year-round. So there's the first thing is getting focused, and then that way you increase your return on investment, kind of thing. When you get focused, then the target people that you that you're talking to are also focused on that particular area. So those potential clients know what they need. Then they're looking for a sports psychology coach just like you. They'll find.
Dr. Johan?
Yes.
Yeah, may I ask a question, please?
Sure.
Once I define the target, let's say the high school athlete, let's say.
Okay.
Now, what would be steps to take to reach out to them and to find them? How do you go about that?
I think, there's many ways, and get into some of that on our next call. It'll be next. We don't have to wait 2 weeks. It'll be next week,
okay.
Next Thursday.
Right.
But some of the ways are things like, there's so many different ways. Articles, writing. You want to go for low-hanging fruit first. I think the things that are easiest are things like writing an article or a special report on either your website or others. If you can Google, like, for instance, golf. We're in the summertime now, right? And if you can, Alex, Google golf and, mental sports psychology and golf, that kind of thing, and see, or just golf in general, I think, and then just find out who is, in your area. You might put in golf, New York, and see what organizations are, who's writing in terms of blogs, who's writing, and then blogs love to have guest writers, so if you can put a small article or three-part article would be great, so that you could have continued support and say that offer you either one-part or three-part article on, mental performance in golf, and then put that on their site and say you can offer it free in exchange for just a link to your website. And then you want to link to not your home page, but to a page specifically about your coaching, maybe your coaching page, or maybe put part of one good strategy is put part of the article on their blog, you've got five tips, put three of the tips on their blog, and then say for the additional two tips or six more tips, go to this page here where you've got the rest of the article. So usually if there's you offer two or three really good pieces of information, then they'll want to hear more, and that'll lead them right to your website, so you don't want them to just stay on theirs. So so put three of the, say, 10 tips on their site, and then go to your site, make sure that, and check back and make sure that they put that link to your site that's a live link. If it's not working or the link, then they can easily fix that kind of thing. So that's one tip. That these are all free and easy kinds of ways to do things. And you could make sure there's no exclusivity. So you could offer that same article on say 10 different websites or blogs, put it so that you can kind of maximize your the results from one piece of work. Take one article and see different places that you could put it. Alex, sports performance, mental edge, right? Is yours? I forgot what's the name of your your brand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the mental edge. Put that on a blog. You could even make that the title of the article, and if they can put the link to your site at the top and bottom of the article, that's even better, or in the middle, if you can do what's called anchor text, so you don't put the actual link, you don't spell out the link, but you put anchor text, which is, more mental training techniques. And underline that, and they click there, and then that leads to the actual link to your site. Anchor text is great, so it's just it's using the keywords in the article itself in a sentence. Then people are more likely to click on that. They don't have to go to all the way to the bottom of the article to get to your site. They'll just kind of naturally click there to find out more. So that's one tip is articles. Other ones are, I've got all kinds of them. If you can, and then also, if you take that same article and if you could find out if you can become a regular columnist or writer for that for their particular blog, you know, say a golf blog or golf online magazine. Online is so much better than in print. I would say just focus your efforts on online kinds of things, because in print is okay if you can get that in a prestigious magazine, but people don't usually take as much effort to click on. They'd have to type it out to click on to get to it, whereas online they just click on this link. And so if you could become a regular writer for any kind of blog, get a regular kind of column going, then you'll get a regular audience reading it and people wanting to get more services from you. So if you can focus your efforts on writing and articles, that can help a lot. Another thing you can do is podcasting, which is basically just on your website. Basically, it's kind of like having your own radio show, or it could be just making a simple recording. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be real long, where you're giving a few tips, and so that way they get to hear your voice, and just put that on your website as an MP3, and put several of those on there. You know, regulars, if you can do one once a week, you know, then people will start to come back and hear your podcast. Or your podcasting is coming back in style now, big time. So that can be something that you can, that where people get to know you a lot better, and it's very simple because you're just doing audio, and you don't have to, and they can really hear in your voice, you know, your passion for the sport, your knowledge. It puts you in a position of being the expert, and you could take you know, different tips that you offer. You could take questions. You want to think of the questions that clients ask you, or questions that you've heard, the problems, that the challenges that they're trying to solve, and then think of, like, you know, one, say question number one, you know, why can I do it in practice, but I can't perform when it really counts, or something. You know, it's one of the most typical kinds of challenges. And take that question and then answer that question in your podcast. And so each week they do another question. And another thing to think about is multi-purposing, so that you, everything that you do can be multi-purposed into different formats. So every topic that you do, you think, okay, I could do this in print form, you know, like an article or blog. I could also do it, you know, as audio form, like as a podcast, or on my website, which is, you can call it your radio show. And you could do it video with Google Hangouts, which is free, and then it just goes right onto your YouTube channel, and that could be basically your online TV show. So, and it can be just, I think with video you want to make it very short, just 1 to 2 minutes, 90 seconds maximum. I know it sounds really short, but just take whatever topic you've got and chop it into, let's say, 10 pieces, and say give one tip in that 90 seconds. Make sure you give your website, and you can put your website right on the screen there, and then keep doing those, and that video is where people really get to know you and see you and like you, and they get a real sense that you are the expert and you know what you're talking about. You can really help them, so, and talk directly to them. So imagine you've got a client right in front of you, so you're talking right to them about addressing their issue. So those are some a start for techniques. There's a lot of other ones I want to share with you, like speaking and doing, you know, this summer there's training camps. If you can give a talk at one of the any of the training camps, you can just Google on that, you know, say golf training camps or baseball training camps, all kinds of summer camps going on. Those are some other
ways.
I was
thinking about trying to connect to some coaches training programs or something like that, and maybe see if I could at least get the word out that I exist, you know, and maybe some, I might be able to get a bite or two for some coaches in the future.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, so actually training the coaches.
Or at least let them know I'm out there, that I'm able to work with athletes that they might have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be excellent. So connecting with coaches, and if they have a training, a camp, a summer thing that's going on with their athletes, then if you can go there and just give a 30-minute talk or a 45-minute talk to them. And if you've got cards to hand out or something, that would be great. And if you can pass around a sheet and get them to put down their email, then you could get them on your email list, kind of thing. A way to stay in touch with them. And also coaches, talking with the coach individually and letting them know what you do so that you're available for referrals. Sometimes they'll have a referral list oftentimes. So they, keep a referral list of professionals that they refer to. So that's ideal. They might ask you for a stack of business cards, so people would give them those. So that they know, when there's something that comes up, that they've got, you're at, like, the top of their mind as far as referring to you for help. Yeah, that would be fantastic, yeah. So you can just Google that, coaches, summer training camp, and see what, and there's probably all kinds of them going on in various days because the weather's nice now. And sometimes they may have already planned the agenda for the training camp, but they could, they can always, sports psychology is something that I found everybody loves, and they can always add that, put you in for a 30-minute talk. Even if you can't get in on the agenda, you could go there or talk to the coach and be there available to talk with kids. So, another thing I've done before, like with running camps, if you like doing a vacation, I've gone to, different running camps, and you get a wonderful free vacation out of it. Mm-hmm. I've gone to Colorado and done Pikes Peak, run all the way up to the top of Pikes Peak for one running camp, and I went to Hawaii for another running camp, and beautiful areas. So that can be something if you can even. Sometimes they'll invite you for a whole week, and it would normally cost a couple thousand dollars to go to the camp yourself. It might be one for adults too, and but they they'll provide you travel and lodging and all, and it's a fun way to interact with people throughout the week. And have a nice time as well as get clients from it. So I know we're an hour and a half into it here. But this is a really good start, and it's great talking to all of you. And want to continue our talk next week. So we'll do another part two next Thursday. So put that on your calendar if you can, June 11th. That'll be the second Thursday of the month, and then also the 25th. And we'll go from there. How does that sound?
Okay, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We'll see you.
Thank you,
John. If you have any other questions.
Okay, thank you, John.
Yeah, good. And I'll get more specific next week about other ways to reach out.
Right.
Do your marketing. Right. Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye,
Dave.
Thank you.
Good day. See you, Alex.
Bye.
Bye-bye.